Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Do you think Bruce Arians will ever take over the play calling from Byron Leftwich? And will Leonard Fournette become the Bucs' starting running back? Will Rays owner Stu Sterberg open up the wallet after winning the American League? And Kevin Cash wins Manager of the Year. We've got your mailbag questions answered 100% correctly on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, you know who's got the best party planners for your catering in Tampa Bay? Well, it's Mr. Empanada. What the heck is an empanada? Well, here's what you do. You take your favorite foods. You place them inside a pocket of homemade dough that is cooked perfectly until it's golden brown and piping hot. Their empanadas are a fresh twist on some old favorites. You can order delicious menu items from scratch, including soups, salads, and Cuban sandwiches online at MrEmpanada.com or call any one of their 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay. Where Latin food, quality, and service meet, it's Mr. Empanada. Hey, I hope all of you had a very happy Veterans Day, and certainly we are indebted to you forever for your service. And it's a little belated, but we wanted to make sure that we recognize all those.
Well, we're recording this on Veterans Day, so that counts,
right? That's right. Yeah, absolutely. It's still Veterans Day. That's what we're celebrating. But when by the time they hear it, it might not be.
That's true.
Except for those in Las Vegas who tune in, you know, as you know, around midnight.
Yes.
For their workouts, but happy to do that for you.
Hi, Craig.
Yeah, Craig, exactly. Vegas strong. But the rest of you, you may be waking up going, what the heck? That was yesterday. Yeah, we're a little bit late, but not quite as we do this. And we're all just hoping we get through the podcast because as we record, there is a big storm brewing right outside my door. And it is, I'm telling you, man, the rain in this thing is massive. Of course, Hurricane Eta? Eta.
I think it's Eta, isn't it? Isn't that the Greek letter?
Yeah, that's right, Eta. Yeah, that's right. I should know. My wife is Greek, but she's got to teach me the alphabet. Yeah, so Hurricane Eta is knocking, and there's just a lot of rain, a lot of flooding I saw on the news, a lot of power outages as far up here as in the Carrollwood. I'm a little north of that in Lutes, but man, you know, here's the thing. If you were playing the 2020 bingo disaster game, okay, so we've already, like, called out things like the pandemic and, you know, murder hornets, and, you know, you can now check off hurricane, because that was the one box I think we had left.
Hey, don't tempt fate. There's still another month and a half left on this year, man.
Fate. There's other letters for sure.
No, I just mean other things that could happen.
Hurricanes. It's 2020 bingo, disaster bingo right here, and hurricane is up. So, yeah, man, thank goodness this thing isn't bigger. But have you seen have you followed the path of this storm? This thing came as most of them do, somewhere streaking across the Caribbean. It looked like it was like somebody on vacation. It stops in Cancun, you know, the Yucatan Peninsula, gets all hammered over there, chiefed up, and then over to Miami kind of area, maybe does a little South Beach, I don't know. Then back towards Marco Island, like up the coast, the west coast of Florida, and then it's darting a little bit here north of Tampa. I mean, this thing, the track of, I've never seen a storm zigzag like this.
Well, if you look at the pattern, it looks like the number 2.
Yes.
On your map.
Yeah.
I mean, it did it backwards as far as writing
it's number 2, all right.
But
yeah. Bum-bum. Yeah.
Yeah,
it does. It does look like a 2, backwards 2.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how it went one direction and just, you know, basically did almost a 180 and went backwards.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's drunk.
It's hammered. Obviously, I've been to Cancun. I know what happens down there. It, and so it's weaving its way back across the state. And so there's this dry air. I love meteorology, by the way. There are some certain things, if I could do it again, you know, like you have kind of an interest when you're growing up.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of them. Air travel was one. I love aviation. I think I still don't know how that happens, but I'm fascinated by it. And so you see the dry air. You can see all this dry air in the Gulf, and it's just shearing, you know, up one side of this storm, which is then bending it back across the state, obviously, because hurricanes don't like dry air. And this is what I've heard. So, yeah, it's fascinating to watch the pattern of this thing. But it's got a lot of water, and there's a lot of people that have some flooding, and I feel bad for them because there's some storm surge, and you got the salt water mixing with the rainwater. It's like mad. Here you got the salt water, and then you got the rainwater, and then, yeah, you got a hurricane. So it's just been here's the other thing I saw, and this is true. It was on Twitter, so it must be true. There's a picture of Jim Cantore. Now, you know you never want Jim Cantore at your door, right?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. Guess where he was? He was on Davis Islands. And I know for all the world he's going to end up at Tom Brady's house or Jeter's house, more appropriately.
Isn't that Antonio Brown's house now?
It is now, yes. Name a star. I'll take a star in Davis Islands for $300, Alex. Yeah, but it's... Alex Trebek, the great late Alex Trebek, by the way, died at 80 just a couple years ago. I don't know why I segued into that. But, yeah, so Jim Cantore's out there on Davis Island. So I'm anticipating that he's anticipating that, you know, this was when Irma came, which was a frightening thing, right? It was Category 5, and it was headed right for Tampa. He was out because I bailed. I got out of here.
I did too.
I went to Chicago.
I was in Charlotte.
I wasn't going to ride that one out at all. And I secured the house and got on a plane, got out, and I'm watching, and he's at the, he was like Harbor Island. He was like sitting out there, you know, at Jackson's or whatever. And I thought, oof. And that one steered just a little bit east, maybe.
South, and then it came up.
South,
you know,
and it went across up through the I-4 area or somewhere.
Yep, it came up the state, kind of, you know, not up the spine, but it hit south of here, and then, so it... Ended up, Tampa was on the west side of the storm instead of the east side, which was better. So,
yeah, that was something. And then everybody scattered. I remember the Bucks were going to play. They had a plan. Everybody scattered for them too. They secured some place in Carolinas, I think, and a bunch of guys went everywhere. But their plan was if Tampa had been shut down, because with all the power and the you know emergency, they weren't going to be able to practice here or something. They were going to go to the University of Minnesota, and they were going to stay there. And they had a game. The first game would have been canceled with Miami, and
it was moved back to like week 9 or 10 or whatever. So they played 16 straight games.
Right. The next game was the Vikings game, I believe, and so they were going to stay, just practice for a week in Minnesota. So I went to Chicago. I was like, well, this is close. You know, I could just hop over. And then they said no, it was all clear. They were going to come back, and because it just missed Tampa and everything was okay. But those guys trying to get back. Remember the gas lines and everybody's out of gas and they're coming. The traffic jams on 75 and I-4 and all that. It was really something. So
yeah, we bailed out early for that storm. My wife, it was Labor Day. It was that Monday. She had a minor surgery on that Tuesday. And my youngest son was in VPK, or my oldest was in VPK at the time. So I'm talking to the head of the VPK where we were at and said, you know, hey, we're thinking of bailing, but, you know, I don't want him to miss school because attendance counts. And she's like, the county already told us they're closing Friday and Monday. She goes, if you leave tomorrow, which was Wednesday after school, which ended at noon, I think, she goes, you'll miss one day of school. Do it.
Done. Yeah.
I was like, okay. So I came home, told my wife was still sleeping. So I told my mother-in-law, I said, pack up, we're leaving tomorrow at noon. And then my wife wakes up, I'm like, by the way, we're leaving tomorrow at noon, I'm evacuating. She said, what?
Good morning.
So I pack up the house, board, you know, put the hurricane shutters up and get, you know, two kids, my mother-in-law, my wife who just had surgery, and our cats, and put them in the car, and off we went to Charlotte. And my wife still gives me crap about that today because she, you know, she was no help and uncomfortable in the car, but...
Oh, God.
But we got out of town early, which was nice because the traffic wasn't nearly as bad because most people didn't go till, you know, Friday.
Towards the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, we were able to get out on Wednesday, so.
Yeah, I think I went late that week, too. I was going to ride it out by myself. My family was already in Chicago, and then I got to thinking about it. I was like, wait, if it hits here and the Bucks play someplace else, there's not going to be any air travel. I can't get out of the airport's going to be closed. Like, what am I going to do?
Yep.
So I thought, you know, well, I'll just go up there and hang out. And then it was a problem trying to get back because – the flights were all booked, and I got as close as Orlando. Found a flight to Orlando and then rented a car. Okay. And by the time I drove back, there was a lot of traffic, but I wasn't going down 75, which was really bad. But I-4, it was mostly power trucks. Like they were all headed towards, you know, where it came ashore down there.
Yep.
Captiva or whatever it was. Not exactly sure, but down south of Tampa.
Yep. If I recall, too, we were supposed to start this podcast that week.
We were.
And we pushed it back a couple weeks because of the storms and a lot of other things, too. But that was a big part of it.
National disasters were happening. That was a sign. What were we thinking? 5 years, 6 years later, whatever. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, we hope you're staying safe, and we hope you had a good Veterans Day. That's all the housekeeping we got. Okay, that's it, folks. Now, since we last spoke, I think I mentioned that me and Tom and you, we all talked about Kevin Cash. Mm-hmm. He did win Manager of the Year.
Yes, he did.
Congratulations to him. Well-deserving, obviously. It's like the third time I think he was a finalist or something like that. And, you know, I must say, he'll never get the credit he deserves, even though I know everybody's, well, what do you mean he's Manager of the Year? Well, yeah, okay. But even like I was reading, you know, columns in different, like Boston, for one, others, that basically said, you know, great, he's the best reader of analytics in the major leagues. You know, like that's always going to be the thing. And it doesn't matter if it's Kevin Cash or somebody else. If you manage the Rays, you're never going to be given full credit on the same par as, you know, Aaron Boone, for example, who just has to fill out an all-star team lineup. And, you know, because the Rays have the Rays way of doing things. But I actually think that what he has to do to get players to buy in
exactly
is the biggest thing, right? It's one thing to say, yeah, we do use this as a tool. We use it very extensively. We have to do it because, you know, we don't have the payroll. We're a 1 through 40 man roster that's going to beat the 1 through 9 man roster with the Yankees, whatever. But Kevin has to actually sell it to these guys and get them to believe it. And in doing so, you know, listening to his interviews, you know, he's so, you know, we talked the other day about somebody who was some self-unaware. Kevin is incredibly self-aware. And what I mean by that is he's authentic. He's completely Kevin Cash, good, bad, or indifferent. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't get a little hot sometimes because we've seen him do that. But basically, he approaches it the same way, everybody the same way. He's just a great, you know, authentic guy that loves the game and that is self-deprecating enough about himself, has a sense of humor about it, has fun with it. And I can't believe, you know, of course, we've talked about the, you know, taking Snell out in game six and all of that. And it's going to keep coming up for the rest of the time that he ever manages until he, or unless he were to win a World Series. But he handles that with such humor. And he talks about it freely, and he knows, you know, he was funny on the Zoom call I saw. He was talking about how, well, look, when you go home and your 13 and 14 year old daughter, the first thing they say is, Dad, why'd you take Snell out? He goes, everything else from there is pretty easy. You know, try to explain to your family. But just the best temperament about him. Very happy for him, obviously. And he is indisputably one hell of a manager. I mean, they went 40-20. And I know this vote was taken before the playoffs. But then look who they did. Look what they did. Look what they beat. I think when we look back at this baseball team and the pieces that were on it, and frankly, you know, guys like Brandon Lau, just you know, so many bats just went dead silent, right? And they still managed to get where they were and to beat the Yankees and to beat the Astros. I mean, those are not small accomplishments. And so anyway, happy that he won it.
Absolutely. And did you see, and just a quick note, Trevor Bauer wins the NL Cy Young Award for the Reds. It's the first time the Reds have had a Cy Young Award winner.
You said that. I couldn't believe that because, I mean, first of all, they're the oldest franchise, I think, in baseball, just about, right?
Yep.
And if not the oldest. And I mean, all those World Series, the big red machines, I mean, you do remember the position players. I can't name that many pitchers from that era. But regardless, it just doesn't seem to – the Rays have had two.
Mm-hmm.
The Tampa Bay Rays have had David Price and Blake Snell, and they've been here 20 minutes. So – how is that possible?
It shocked me when I heard that. I was like, I had to do a double take and read the story twice. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, you know, granted, you know, they've always been known for the offensive players from, you know, Johnny Bench and Pete Rose and Joe Morgan and you know, go through the list. But then you go, they've never had a Cy Young Award winner? I mean, they've had pitchers like Jose Rijo and Tom Browning has pitched a perfect game. And those are some of the more recent pitchers. But, yeah, it's their first.
When they were winning 100 games back in the day, you know, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, never had a Cy Young Award. Just crazy. Well,
good for the Reds. Good to see them wrap that up. We had some Buck news before we get to your questions real here. Ali Marpet. Let me just say something. Ali Marpet should have made the Pro Bowl on the strength of him not playing. I mean, you want to know how valuable a guy is? Take him out of the lineup. Holy cow. I knew he was their highest-rated lineman. I didn't know that he was the difference between, you know, winning and losing, but that's turned out what it was. He didn't play, obviously, the other night, you know, in that critical game against the Saints, and Joe Haig and Donovan Smith took turns, you know, letting guys hit their quarterback, but he was in the concussion protocol. No one really remembered the play he got the concussion on, by the way, the week before at the Giants, but wasn't able to play. Well, he was back at practice on Wednesday. Now, doesn't mean he's out of the protocol, but he's advancing through it. One of the early things are you get to get some physical activity, get to practice with the team. If he doesn't wake up with headaches or something like that, and he'll continue to advance. And looks like he's going to be able to play at Carolina, which is a big, you know, because that was not a good effort. And they had gone a pretty good while without, you know, giving up a sack. And or many sacks this year. And then, of course, they took Brady down 3 times. I think they hit him 9 times. It was not pretty. So having Marpet back will be big. And then the other thing, the other break they learned with respect to injuries is that Christian McCaffrey, who just came back against Kansas City, and yes, what a difference he made. They almost beat the Chiefs in Kansas City. They lost by a field goal. And McCaffrey was terrific. He had like 94 total yards, I think, in the first half. He dinged up his shoulder, so it looks like he's not going to be able to play, which is unfortunate for Carolina, but fortunate for the Bucs, obviously. Although I will say this, no one has held McCaffrey down the way the Bucs have these last 2 years. I mean, they have stoned him. Remember that one game Jameis played and the Bucs played up in Carolina? They had the 4th-and-1.
Mm-hmm. That was last year, I believe.
Last year. And
it was the second game of the season. It was Thursday night, I believe.
I think you're right. And they ran, instead of running Newton, which you would think they would do, but he had a Liz Frank injury, they ran McCaffrey, and he got knocked out at the sideline or something like that. But, yeah, that might have been 2 years ago, actually.
Was it 2 years ago? Remember. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was, too. That was because I think Vernon Hargreaves might have been the one that made the tackle. But anyway.
You're right. It was Hargreaves. So, yeah, it would have been two years ago.
But they I know last year in London he didn't get many yards. I mean, they just done a really good job on him. But listen, he's a tremendous player. And look, Carolina's playing hard, man. Matt Rhule's going to be—he's a really good coach. They just haven't got their defense all together yet. They're playing okay. They don't rush the passer well. I think they're last with Jacksonville in the league. They average about a sack a game, which is not good. And so, you know, presumably if Tom Brady can sit back there and pat the ball and, you know, find one of his 25 receivers, they'll do well. But it's going to help to have Marpet. It's going to help them not to have to have Christian McCaffrey going against them. So those are a couple of good breaks for the Bucs.
Yes, it is. Well, we'll start with the questions then, and actually you've halfway answered one of them. But Ellis asked, has the absence of Vita Vea and most recently Ali Marpet shown just how valuable those two players are to this franchise?
Yeah, well, let's just run back my first answer. But, yeah, I think it has because in both cases, first of all, I think the Bucs' success this year, to be honest, I mean, you could say, well, it's, you know, it's Brady, everything. Yeah, I told you every question and answer is Brady. But beyond that, because one guy cannot do it by himself, particularly the quarterback, the Bucs have won at the line of scrimmage all year long until this past week. This is how they've won games. They have dominated, I think, whether it was running the ball with Ronald Jones. You know, he had the 300-yard games. Leonard Fournette had a 100-yard game against Carolina. Defensively, I think their front seven has been playing as good as anybody, particularly with Vita Vea up and through the Chicago game. Up until, you know, I mean, these last 2 weeks, teams rushed for over 100 yards on them. But before that, it had been, you know, over a year, I think, or close to a year. They had the number one rush defense in the NFL. And Vea was a huge part of it and was becoming a Pro Bowl player, an impact player, and he was doing it in the pass rush game as well as the run. And he's just a massively strong guy that you can't block with one person. He's lined up next to Ndamukong Suh, who for whatever reason has been getting a ton of one-on-ones. It's very interesting how teams are playing him. And he's been taking advantage of him. He's got four sacks. I think Vea is an enormous loss. Now, you know, can I find teams that have injuries? Yeah. That win the Super Bowl? Yeah. I mean, you have to have the next man up mentality. I mean, Raheem Nunez-Roches is a good player. They went and got Steve McClendon, who, you know, is around about the same talent, I think, as Nunez-Roches. So there's not a fall off from what is now your starter to your backup. But it's not Vita Vea. It's just not. And I don't know that he's the reason why they're getting a little leaky in their run defense, because if you talk to Todd Bowles, they say, you know, guys are getting out of their gaps. They're maybe trying to do too much, do somebody else's job. But that usually happens when you're getting beat. You know, that usually happens when the guys up front aren't getting it done. You stop trusting what's going to happen in front of you, and you start shooting gaps that aren't there that you probably shouldn't, and, you know, losing your integrity of the defense. And it just, you know, they've been hurt by it. And they were really hurt. And this is where I think the Saints game in particular, because they did a really good job on Kamara. And now ask yourself why. Now, Kamara's stronger than most people think. But Kamara's game is speed, right? Running routes, getting on the edge, perimeter stuff. And the Bucs can run. And for two games, they corralled Alvin Kamara. Hurt him a few times in the pass game. But for the most part, he hadn't done anything. So you know what they did? They ran power. They ran power with Taysom Hill. They pulled the guard. They had everybody going the same. And he got behind them. And Taysom Hill is look at him. He's put together, man. He's a big dude. And safeties and corners don't really like hitting him. And when they did, they went backwards. And I just think that if you'd had that Vita Vea and they tried to run inside like that, it would have been no contest. But because they are a little nicked up, you know, in the defensive tackles position, I think they took advantage of it.
Well, in New Orleans did exactly what the Giants did to the Bucs.
Yes, yes.
On Monday night. I mean, the Giants showed you the blueprint of run power.
Yep, power all day. Yep.
And there is openings in that run defense, particularly without Vea in there.
Absolutely. They got leaky, and they're going to have to clean it up, and they're going to have to hold up, you know. And it's just, you know, it's who has the best dudes and how you want to attack them. I mean, a year ago or a couple of years ago, teams would always attack them on the perimeter, you know, and they didn't think that, you know, when you had Hargraves, they didn't think those guys could tackle. They didn't do a very good job. You know, you didn't have guys like, you know, Shaq Barrett helping you. Mm-hmm. So they've improved on the edges quite a bit. But I think you're going to see more of it. I think you're going to see some power runs and power run attempts by Carolina. And if, like I said, if they had McCaffrey, this would be an even more interesting game. I still think it's going to be a close game. Carolina played really well against Kansas City. I don't know if they can do it 2 weeks in a row. Seems to me that you know, Tom Brady bounces back better than any quarterback in the history of the game. But, yeah, I would agree that, and especially Ali Marpet, who we talked about, best offensive lineman. They've been together. They've only missed one game. You know, the whole season start out, first eight games, they had all five offensive linemen, which is rare. And I think they found out that, you know what, maybe Joe Haig or, you know, whoever they put back there instead, you know, nobody has six, seven, eight good offensive linemen. You're going to take a little out of you if you lose an Ali Marpet. And so, especially on that side with Donovan Smith, who has struggled in, by himself, but to lose his wingman, that's particularly tough, especially in a game where you only attempt four rushing plays, which is unforgivable, but that's what happened. So, great question. And I think it does show how great they, you don't know, you know, until they're gone, you don't miss them as much, right?
Exactly. All right. We're going to combine a few questions here. So give me a minute here, but we have four questions pretty much on the same point. Yeah. Craig in Vegas asks, with the Bucs being all in this season, when do the Glazers tell Bruce Arians that he needs to get more involved in play calling so they don't get embarrassed on national TV? Joe asked, will Arians ever take over the play calling? Cameron had asked, do you think Byron Leftwich is holding the offense back? And Les had followed up with, I'm sure Tom Brady has the freedom to change the play at the line, So how much of this awful play calling is on Leftwich, and how much of it is on Tom Brady? Because I can't believe the game plan against the Saints was to only run the ball four times.
Yeah, they all are kind of in there. I'll try to weave through them a little bit here. Let me start with Bruce Arians and play calling. And I'll just say this. First of all, I've learned in this business never to say never, okay? Because funny things happen when guys' jobs are on the line, all right? We're at a critical time in this season. I don't know if people... Because, you know, on the one hand, everybody was like really, you know, I'm reading my timeline after the Bucks, and it had to be embarrassing, right? You've waited all week for Sunday night, as Carrie Underwood sings.
Right? Well, in 12 years to host a Sunday night game.
In 12 years, yeah. Been waiting all evening for Sunday night, whatever. I can't sing. But so, you know, you got Brady, and you got Drew Brees, and you got the rematch. And this is for first place, and they're going to home, and they're going to do it. And you got Al, and you got Chris Collinsworth sliding in, and you have that great music. Da, 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 you know, get all that. So what happens? They lay an omelet. Not an egg, an omelet. I mean, they can't do anything. Four three and outs. I've been doing this. You know how many bad teams I've covered on this franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, they haven't made a playoffs in 12 years. That, I can't remember... Really can't. If it's happened, it's too long ago. Can't remember a Buccaneer team starting the game with 4-3 and outs. I can't. And when you think, you go, wait a minute, 4-3, you didn't get a first down. But not only did you not get a first down, Tom Brady's your quarterback. Like, wait a minute. I mean, I'm sure Trent Dilfer must have done this before, but this is Tom Brady. This isn't, you know, all due respect, Craig Erickson. I mean, what, you know. This isn't.
We know Jameis
Tim
didn't
Rattay.
Do it.
I mean, what do we?
Yeah, we know Jameis, you know, didn't, I mean, do it, because there would have been a pick six in there. But
well, yeah, the ball would have gone the other way. But I'm just saying, he changed the scoreboard. You got to give him that. But you know what I'm saying? Like all those quarterbacks, like I can't remember. Casey Weldon probably started a game. I don't remember 4-4, 3-4. You know, 4-4 now start. It didn't make any sense. And so with respect to play calling, I had a conversation with Arians. Last year, I think it was, I was talking to him about when he took the job and why he took the job and sort of, you know, how, you know, he had quit and he came back. And, you know, one of the things he talked about was that, you know, he wasn't going to come back unless he could get all his coaches. And he meant all of them. It turns out he meant like 40 of them. But he wanted his guys, and his guys were available. Todd Bowles had been fired. And Byron had been in Carolina, who took over from Mike McCoy when he got fired. I think he called the last eight games as a coordinator in Arizona. He got him. You know, he got everybody. Harold Goodwin, all those guys. So he got his guys, right? Which was big, important for Bruce. But then I said to him, I said, you know, here's the thing that I'm trying to figure out is that, you know, they wanted Bruce Arians, the guy that was in Arizona and Indianapolis. I said, but you called plays. You know, you were the play caller. So I said, the Glazers had to have probably assumed at least or wanted you to come over because you had Winston. You know, they probably wanted you to run the offense, didn't they? Didn't they expect you would do that? And he was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a conversation. Not a good one, but it was a conversation. He had to convince the Glazers that, you know, one of the prerequisites of him taking this job, he was not calling plays. His wasn't. Now, what does that mean? It's his offense, right? I mean, you know. So, he's got a guy he trusts, really thinks is going to be a bright coach in Byron Leftwich. Just does. Just trusts him. Sees the game. Says he sees the game the way I see it. He played under him. Stood there with him and Ben all those years in Pittsburgh. So, and he's called plays. He did it in Arizona. So, he trusts him. And more than that, you know, they have discussions about things, and, you know, I don't think at 67 years old, and people don't see this because you just turn on the TV at, you know, 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock on Sunday, but those guys spent 100 hours, more than 100, but, you know, they practically live at the facility during the football season, you know, and it's about 6.5-7 days a week, but the end of the day, it's like somebody has to put together all those scripts. Somebody has to, you know, decide, you know, what are we going to run on 2nd and 3 on the right hash, you know, against this front, you know, and you do the situational, you know, these play sheets and these cards, and that takes time. And you're up late, like, you know, the coordinators can be doing this till midnight and then back at it again at 5 in the morning. It's not an easy thing. And, you know, Tuesdays is kind of a game planning day to present it to the quarterback and everything. So I don't – Bruce was never interested in getting into that again. And you know, remember, this is a guy with health problems. This is a guy, you know, that left football for a reason. And so he knew his limitations, and he more than that, he had confidence in Byron. So he decided, I'm not calling it. He told the Glazers, and they still hired him, and they bought his plan. Now, that's a long way of saying, hell no, he's not taking over the play calling. He's on the mic. I mean, he can call any play he wants to now. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's he? When you say take over the play calling, it's kind of like you have a menu, and you've already gone through the tapes, and you've already decided what your game plan is and what you're going to attack in this front and that defense and that coverage. And when you have this personnel, you know, if it's three tight ends, four wide, whatever. So you already have a game plan. So really it's just deciding, you know, sort of, I don't know. It's like a menu. Like, what do you want off the menu this time? You know, it's all good. Here, we're going to run this on it. So now this, and that gets us to Brady, right? Tom Brady every week, in my opinion, is taking more control of this offense. And it just makes sense, right? Because in the beginning, they had to teach him everything. They had to teach him the terminology. Now, he can run any – Tom Brady would be successful in any offense, first and foremost. But he still had to put some brain power on top of all the physical conditioning he does. And I just think that, you know, he's done all this, and he's like, do you like this? Do you don't like this? They want him to run Bruce's offense. They want him to look down the field more. They want him – to go deep to shallow, and maybe he went shallow to deep. But at the end of the day, the ball's in his hand. He has to feel comfortable. It's kind of like a pitcher in some ways. You know, like I always thought the catcher suggests what you should throw. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you got the ball, okay? So you can shake him off, and maybe he gets mad behind home plate. But if you don't feel confident in the fingers he's putting down, you better not try to throw that pitch, because it's just not going to go where you want it to. You should throw the pitch that you feel more confidence in that situation. I just think that's where we're at with Brady. I just think that Brady, you know, he's got the ball. He'll make changes. He'll make checks. And he does make checks to the line of scrimmage, and he can get to more than one play. And sometimes he's too quick to like, predetermine where the ball should go. But he's seen so much. You know, like, the other day, there's a play. And everybody, Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network highlighted this. I wrote about this in the Tampa Bay Times on TampaBay.com. Go read it. And it, you know, it was in the second quarter, I think, and they were playing, I want to say, cover three, and there was going to be a single safety who's going to rotate to the top middle of the field. And Brady took the snap, and he had trips left, and he had single receiver. He had Miller on the right. And the corner was dropping back. No safety help on that side. And Brady predetermined. He pretty much knew, I've got 7, 8, 10 yards over here. It's just a stick route. And there's lots of room. That's where the ball's going. And so he took his drop. Turns out the Kappa was getting beat on the pass rush a little bit. It was a little leaky on that side, the right side. Brady could see it, though. And he turned his hips. And when he turned his hips, that deep safety, that safety that's supposed to be in the middle of the field, he immediately started running towards the sideline. Like, he vacated it. You know, he came downhill. Well, Mike Evans runs by him and is wide ass open. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody's around him. I literally could have thrown a touchdown pass in that situation. But Tom had already committed to throwing the ball to the sideline, which is why the safety kind of read that and broke anyway. So he'd have had to stop, then look downfield, you know, and if you saw him, he could have thrown a touchdown, and he probably might have gotten hit when he threw it. But you can't, like, who's that on, right? It's like, there's Mike Evans. He's wide open. And they didn't target Evans until the last 2 minutes of the first half. They were down 28-0, which should never happen. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you have to design a bubble screen, whatever it is. But, you know, that's sort of what, and that's what I mean by, like, Brady is going to do Brady things. You know, he's gonna do Brady things because he's done it for 21 years, and that means, and he'll tell you, the one thing about Tom is he'll tell you exactly how he sees the game. You know, I'm gonna throw the ball to the open guy. And there have been games where Gronk didn't see a pass. And there's been games where Mike saw one, you know, or two. And there's been games where Mike had 12 targets and had over 100 yards. And so it just depends. You know, Tom is going to stick with his progressions, and he's going to throw the ball to who he thinks is open.
Here's my question. And I was at the game Sunday night, and I thought the play calling was atrocious. But
right,
how much of the Bucs' plays are scripted to start the game?
Well, you would think 12 to 15 plays. I mean, they don't always come off that way because, again, you know, you're into – like the first play, they decided to take a shot. Now, there's probably a shot in a lot of different pass plays. But they ran a shot play, and Tristan Wirfs got shoved into the quarterback, and they actually hit his arm as he threw the ball. And so you give up a pressure there. Now it's second down.
Yep.
Well, so it's second and 10, you know – do you have many second and 10 plays? Well, they called a running play. And
well, but when you call a shot play on the first play, you have to assume that there's a decent chance you're going to have a second and 10.
Right, but you got to get the look. In other words, I don't know when they went out there. You know, okay, so if they go out with three wide receivers, they got to anticipate that the Saints are going to be in nickel. Or if they go out in two tight ends and two wide receivers, they're going to be in a base. So they're trying to determine the personnel based on what they have on the field. And so they put their guys on the field, and I don't remember who it was. I'd have to go back and look to see if they had four receivers or not. But based on what they were trying to dictate, maybe the shot was there, maybe it wasn't. But he took it, and, you know, he got pressure. And so now you go, well, did they script a second down run? Well, not unless they were in second and 10. Did they have, you know what I mean? Like, if they hit the shot play, are they running the ball on first down in the next play? I don't think it goes. It's kind of a down and distance thing. But, yes, you have 10 to 12 to 15 plays that you script that you really like, that you want to sort of influence their personnel, and you're trying to put them at a disadvantage. For example, if they're better in base with the third linebacker than they are with their fifth defensive back, then you want that fifth defensive back on the field. You just do. You want to run three wides or four wides so that they have to play nickel.
Well, and I agree. And the reason I asked about how much do they script is it's hard when after 12 plays you're down 21-0 and after 14 plays you're down 28-0.
Yeah, that script's gone.
I mean, well, but even everything, you know, part of the script early too is setting up things for later in the game.
And no
doubt.
We're
going to give you this look and do this so that later in the game we give you this look and do something completely
different. What
you're
saying is they didn't have enough plays.
But
when you don't make a first down, you don't get enough plays.
And I realize everyone criticizes how many times they ran the ball.
Yeah.
And you absolutely do want more than four runs to take out the kneel down. But when you're down 28-0 after 14 plays.
That's what Bruce said.
You start running.
You're running four.
What are you running for? I mean, you know, you're eating clock. You're doing this. Now, but, you know, my problem with the play calling was, and, you know, maybe you didn't realize this till you're down 21-0 because you didn't run enough plays, but everything was seven-step drops and 15 yards down the field when you couldn't block anybody.
Yeah.
There was no adjustments to shorten up your play call. I mean, you know, that's great. I realize, you know, Bruce Arians' offense wants to get the ball down the field, but if your left guard and left tackle can't block anybody,
right,
then you can't run 15-yard routes. You don't have enough time to get the ball there.
Right.
And, you know, that was my problem with the play calling, but it also happened so quickly. I mean, you know, play calling, you know, people talk about there's a rhythm to it and getting your players in rhythm in that. And when you go three and out, two plays an interception, I mean, I don't care who the play caller is. It's never – you're not going to find a rhythm when that happens. I mean, you know – They missed the shot play. Brady overthrew Gronk on a play that he was open. That would have been a first down. I mean, there was a lot of things. And then, you know, Tom Brady's on his butt a lot of the time, too. So, you know, the play calling was bad.
I think what you just said was the biggest thing. He got hit. Mm-hmm. Listen, Tom Brady, no quarterback likes to get hit.
No.
Those older guys particularly don't like to get hit. And if there's one thing you can see on tape with Tom Brady as he's gotten through later in his career, if he sees somebody win off the line of scrimmage, he's throwing that ball away if he can.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to stand in there because he knows, you know, I need to play 16 games for my team. What good is it going to do me coming to Tampa, right, and going through all this at 43 if I can't make it through 16 games and the postseason?
And he also knows a possession in the first quarter isn't that important. I mean, granted, you hope your defense can stop somebody, not give up, you know, four touchdowns in the first five drives. But
Maybe you know, if you hadn't left them out there to dry and they had half the field to carry. But, yeah, we saw that, I mean, against Green Bay, for example. And here's the thing I wrote about in the Tampa Bay Times today, if you want to read it on tampabay.com, is that the slow starts are killing them right now. Mm-hmm. Like, the beginning of the season, they were even the first series of the season. Remember Tom Brady went 85 yards and spiked the ball in the end zone? They're up 7-0. Now, it didn't go so well after that. But every game, okay, up and through until they got to, like, even Chicago, I think. But after that, you know, they got off to some slow start. I mean, they trailed Green Bay 10-0. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, my God, this is going to be a blowout. And what happened?
The Raiders, they were trailing out there.
They trailed the Raiders. They trailed the Giants, you know. I mean, they were up 3-0, but then all of a sudden, you know, the Giants score a couple, three times, and they're down, you know, they're down big. And, I mean, they have started so slow. And it's just been, you know, three and outs, lack of execution, interception here or there. For the most part, until this past game, Tom had been really good with the ball. But they're not starting fast.
Well, but I think, you know, as you mentioned that and you start thinking about it and thinking back to the game Sunday night, there was no easy plays in those first 12 plays.
No.
There was no screen pass or, you know, a hit or, you know, a quick slant or, you know, there was no easy plays to get a rhythm, to get your team going. It was shots down the field. And if you hit them, great, but they're low percentage plays.
But you're also putting stress on your offensive line, and you had an offensive line that hadn't played together.
Yeah. See, well, that too.
That doesn't marry up very well. Like, you know, you hear this stuff about, well, what if you don't have Marpet? Next man up. I got confidence in everybody. Next man up. Joe Hague will do a good job. He's a veteran.
But it was pretty obvious pretty quickly that wasn't working very well.
No, it didn't hold up.
But there was no change. There was no change in the play call.
No change to try to account for that. And that's where running the ball. See, and I understand, like, when you get down and it's 7-0, then it's 14. But listen, they were down 17 points to the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't remember them running it four times. You know, like, you've been behind. You were down 10 to the Green Bay Packers. And, yeah, granted, you got a pick six and another interception down to the two-yard line. But, I mean, you've been behind teams before. And if it's two scores or even three, just to function, like, you can't ask these guys to pass protect almost literally every play. The second play of the game is run play. They had exactly three more for the rest of the game. It's an NFL record. Like, you can't ever come out of the game and go, yeah, we ran it three times. We ran it four times. Like, I'm sorry. That's just not, it's not feasible. Yeah, you might not get a lot of yards, and yeah, you might eat up the clock, but you got to give those guys a break once in a while. You got to let them come off the ball.
It also lets your offensive linemen tee off on a D lineman instead of going back in pass protection, catchers, which they weren't working.
Right. You're taking it in the face. You'd rather come off the ball and knock someone back. And when they run the football and they run it well, it's helped their pass protection because they can be a little more aggressive. You know, it looks like a run. It feels like a run. It's play action. And you know, teams are so geared up coming downhill for the running play that then they, you know, catch those linebackers coming downhill, and then they have to stop and go back, and then you got big zones wide open all over the place. That's where Tom has really thrived. But they didn't help their offensive line. And I thought it was a poor game plan. They executed it even worse. You know, it just, none of it fit together. And it should have. And the other part, and I don't have any, and someone might ask this question about this, is that I still think when you introduce a guy like Antonio Brown, it's one more ingredient to what you were already cooking, a pretty good meal.
Well, yeah, it may have been. Hey, I mean, it was early in the game. I don't think it was the first drive. I think it was the second drive. And we were sitting at near the north end zone. So, and it was, that's, the Bucs were, had their backs faced to that at that point. So they were close to us. And lined up across the way, it was on one side, it was Evans, Godwin, and Brown with Gronk on the opposite side.
Yep.
And you're going, wow.
Pro Bowl, six Pro Bowls. Yeah.
Maybe several Hall of Famers.
At least.
You know, I mean, you're
Brown and Gronk.
Brown and Gronk and Evans.
Maybe Evans.
You know,
yeah.
Possibly. And Godwin's too young to know. But
the quarterback. So, yeah. Yeah. It's a Hall of Fame team.
Saw the four receivers, you know, and right. Gronk was tight end. But you saw them. It was like just sitting there watching. It was like, wow, that's a lot of talent.
And yet they whipped their butts. They absolutely destroyed them. It was like, here you go. How's this taste?
But maybe it was designed to throw the ball more, trying to use those weapons, but also keep those weapons happy.
Right. That's hard to do.
It is.
It's hard to do. Because receivers want the ball. I mean, that's the thing about it is like everybody goes, well, there's a diva. This guy's a diva. He's a receiver. He's a diva. They can't throw themselves over the ball. You know, they just can't. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, they need somebody. They need the guys to block. They need the quarterback to see them. They need the coach to call the play. You know, and there is an onus on trying to get everybody involved and everybody happy. But Tom's at the point, too, and I think the players realize this. Like, you can go back and say, I was open. You can do all you want. Tom's going to throw the ball where he thinks it should go. And he don't care who it is. Mm-hmm. He trusts the guys that are out there. And if he doesn't trust you, you're not out there. And if he doesn't trust you and you're out there, then you're never getting the ball. He'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. I'm not throwing you. You can put him out there if you want. I'm not throwing him the ball. He's literally said that. So the guys I know he trusts that are out there, and he's going to throw whoever he thinks is the most open, period. Period. That's it. And so I think the players realize that. And they better just shut up and take it because no one's happy right now. But I do think, you know, that they need to do a little bit more to try to get Evans. The thing about number one receivers is I think you have responsibility to use them because they're your most talented guy. And then get them involved early.
Well, that was the next question we had was from Kunal who said, Will Leftwich draw up more plays for Evans? It seems like you're trying to spread the ball around, maybe overthinking it. Evans is your number one guy. Why not get him more targets?
I totally agree. Now, within that, you know, you can't force it. I mean, literally, they can double him every play, and they do. But you know what? Jerry Rice would doubled his whole career. He still was Jerry Rice. I mean, you gotta find ways to beat double teams, and you know, you can do things too. You know, you can put him in the slot. You can run stack formations. You can run pick plays. You can. The thing about Mike is, if you watch him, and he's been great. I mean, beyond great, right? I mean, 6 1,000-yard seasons, all that. But a lot of his plays through his career with Jameis, which is the only quarterback he really played with other than the first year, and he played with, you know, some other dudes, McCown and, you know, whatnot. But basically, you know, Mike would run his route, and Jameis might extend the play, and then Mike would extend his route, and before you know it, he'd get all these opportunity balls, you know, and he just went up and made plays. Like, he just outleaped, he just mossed guys, right? It wasn't necessarily a nice, beautiful timing route or an over route, or he's running a post and the ball's waiting. He would just, you know, stay alive. And so many of his receiving yards came that way. I mean, big chunks. And now, you know, that's not how it's going to work.
Well, Brady's not extending plays.
No, he's not extending plays. And the ball's coming out in 2.4 seconds or 3 seconds. And it's going to go to the guy who he thinks has the best matchup, who is open. And so you're not seeing these ridiculous, you know, 50-yard heave it up and let Mike go get it plays. And that's going to take away from some of what he does. Mike is a down the field guy. Like, you know, you can run an occasional slant and deep outs and things like that. But at the end of the day, like, it takes him a little while to get going. He's not one of these little quick twitch receivers like Antonio Brown. You know, Antonio Brown can just step back, step sideways, run the backfield. You know, like, he's got all this quickness and explosiveness just from 0 to 60, whereas Mike's a little bit of a strider, takes him a while to get going, but he's fast and he's big. But he's a down the field guy. And so I think that's all of that is one of the reasons, you know, that and the fact that they're a better team now. I mean, you've got Godwin, you've got Scotty Miller has burst onto the scene. And yet, having said all that, Mike Evans has had the most targets, the most catches, the most yards, and the most touchdowns on this team right now. So it's hard to say he's not getting the ball.
Good point.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, Wren asked, and we'll switch sides of the ball. He says, the Bucks play a 3-4 base, but in nickel they switch to a 2-4 so Bowles can keep linebackers Lavonte David and Devin White on the field. Is it time to sit Devin White in nickel or perhaps rotate sitting Lavonte and Devin until Devin can get a better grasp in coverage? He says, because Get Live is really struggling.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna, first of all, I would never take either of those guys off the field. Sorry, there's no way; they're just too good. And so I understand.
But that is Devin's weak spot. He's still not great in coverage.
He's not the best guy in coverage. Yeah. I will grant you that. And I don't think it's because he can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that he's good at it yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. By saying he's struggling or not good.
I would never take him off the field because here's what he is: he's an eraser. And what I mean by that is if somebody else screws up, if you have one of these plays that they hit because some guy's out of position and it's going, right? Like this play could go. Devin White comes out of ether and runs the guy down and stops him from going to the end zone. He makes up for so many mistakes out there that we don't even know, you know, whether that was his guy or not his guy. And a lot of times it wasn't. But yes, I think he can get better. If I were playing the Bucks, I would take my running back. I would figure out, is he covering the tight end? Is he covering the running back? What is Devin White's pass responsibility on this play? And I would make him go and cover that guy. Whether I throw the ball to him or not, I want to get him out of the middle of the field. You know, I want him in coverage. I'm better off, you know. One of the things that teams have done, interestingly enough, you know, Todd Bowles is really good at bringing blitzes, right?
Yes, he is.
And so what's the best way to do that when you're playing nickel, when you have the extra defensive backs, when you have that hybrid, you know, when Mike Edwards comes in the game and you can bring Winfield down if you want to, or you can drop Winfield, right? Or you can bring Jordan down. You got all these DBs, right? And they're kind of interchangeable. That makes it difficult. Or you can, you know, play zone dog and drop Shaq Barrett or JPP. You can double A-gap blitz, all that stuff. So what teams have done, they just said, you know what? We're not going to let them go to nickel. We're going to go ahead and we're going to keep them in base. We're going to like two tight ends, three tight ends. That way they kind of eliminate some of that, you know, exotic looks that Todd Bowles will give you. So I just think that it's hard. He's got to get better. Let's just face it. He's got to get better at covering running backs. Mm-hmm. He just does, and tight ends. He's just got to get better in coverage. If I were playing them, I'd try to figure out who he's covering and make him isolate on him and get him out of the middle of the field. That's what I would do.
All right, Tommy asks, do you see Leonard Fournette taking over the Bucs starting role since he can catch passes better than Ronald Jones?
I think it's there. I think it's there if he wants to do it. They seem pretty happy with Ronald Jones and starting him in the games. But if Leonard Fournette is going to be what he is, which is a three-down back, I think you're going to need him more. I just think that Tom wants that. Tom trusts that. If we know one thing about Ronald Jones, and he's proven through 9 games, he's not a receiver. I don't care. You know, he may end up with 50 catches. I don't know. He is not a good receiver. He's not a good route runner. His hands are suspect. I mean, he struggles, you know. First and 10, you throw him a pass. Tell me the truth. Aren't you just like when they throw to Ronald Jones, are you like, man, wonder if he catches it or not? I mean, you're almost surprised when he does. And then when he does, it seems like he never gets any yards, you know? It seems like there's a guy right there because he's so focused on the catch. I don't know what it is, but, like, he's not hard to cover because he's rarely opened by a lot. And he doesn't do much with the ball, you know, when he gets it in the receiving game. I mean, LeSean McCoy is an afterthought because they made Fournette their three-down guy. So, like I said, Fournette against Carolina, he had that 100-yard game. Then, of course, he got hurt. Now he's working himself back into shape. I don't think they're going to go away from Ronald Jones totally, but there's an opportunity if Leonard Fournette wants to do that. You know, he's just got to stay productive and stay healthy and stay on the field. And if they stay on schedule, you know, ideally what they want to do is they want to start Rojo, they want to get a lead, and they want Leonard to be their Mariano Rivera and close it. You know, just give the big boy the ball in the fourth quarter, run the clock, and stay away.
Doesn't work. That's when you're down 38-3.
Does not work. And you know what else? It may avoid being down 38-3, you may need to play him right away. This is the other thing. You know what I mean? So that when you do throw it on the first series, and you, instead of going three and out, maybe he makes a first down. What was the biggest play in the Raiders game? Remember what the biggest play was? Third and third. That game's a 24-20
game.
Yeah. They're third and 13. Third and 13. That's a draw play. You know what I mean? Like, that's a give-up down, right? That's a check down. Well, they did. They ran a check down. That dude caught that ball. Safeties were split in cover two, beat the linebacker, and went north-south faster than you can imagine and got 13 yards. And, you know, you're not getting that from Ronald Jones, I don't think. So the opportunity is there for him to take it.
All right, we'll switch to baseball now, and Brantley asked, does Stu Sternberg open the wallet just a bit more this year following the World Series loss and try to save baseball in Florida, or more of the same spending?
Well, first of all, the product is already pretty damn good, and that's not – so it's not a question of does he have to make the product better to save baseball. It's what do fans need to go see them? I mean – we had a pandemic, so we can't really say what would.
Are you going to have fans in the stands this year? I mean, we don't know that answer.
We
right
don't
now.
Know. And so, you know, the motivation won't be that necessarily. I think, if anything, in a weird way, this confirmed to them that they don't need to spend more money, that they can find these guys. I mean, how many G-Man Choi's have they found through the years? You know, how many Mike Brasso's? Think about some of their playoff heroes this past year. You know,
Randy Arozarena.
Hello. I mean, Irm Edwards, you just went and got the best player in baseball, the best hitter in baseball, and he did it in the World Series and the postseason. The dude, his name is on top of Jeter, you know? It's on top of Evan Longoria. I mean, what he did was incredible. So there's so much faith in the scouting and the development and all that of players. I don't see any way that you go, hey, you know what we really need? we need a bopper.
Well,
we need,
but
we,
I think
we need a $25 million bat.
No, I don't think you need that, but there are times you've got to say, hey, we're going to pay Charlie Morton $15 million a year.
Well, but see, this is the thing. Then why aren't they?
Well, but they did for the last two seasons. You know,
the last two, but I mean, okay, so don't they've said they want Charlie Morton back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want him back at $15 million.
Why? Well, that's true they don't. Although I think some – and you're seeing this throughout baseball, is free agency has been very slow, is owners don't know what next season's going to look like yet. I mean, there's a schedule
fans,
on that.
We have
but,
no fans.
But
right.
How much revenue we've got coming in from parking, concessions, tickets, we don't know yet.
Yeah,
we're hopeful.
Not be much. Yeah.
You know, so are you willing to commit $15 million when you may not have any of that? And yeah, sure, there's the joke of the Tampa that they don't have any attendance, so it shouldn't matter. But that is revenue that they have coming in. All, you know, all those fans, those parking, the concessions, all that stuff, is that there next year? So is he worth $15 million if you don't have that? You know,
he may not be worth $15 million, period. I mean, that might just be a good baseball decision at this age. I don't really know. But I'm just saying, at the end of the day, stadium, fans, no fans. What the Rays do works.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're ever – like, if you're going to sign somebody and, you know, I mean, game six notwithstanding, but if you're going to sign somebody, it'll be, you know, let's not let Blake Snell walk out of here and go pitch for the Yankees for $25, $30 million a year.
Well, and look, they do have Blake Snell locked up for several more seasons.
They do.
They've got Brendan Lau locked up for more seasons.
They do.
You know,
but
I mean,
I'm saying –
they
like,
have invested
that,
in some players. It's not like they don't invest in anybody.
No,
Kevin Kiermaier's been getting paid for the last several seasons and has more years on his deal.
He has. I just don't see him going and going, you know, oh, we're going for it now. Because they've been going for it every year. They just do it their way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, look, they're never going to be able to go sign Mike Trout. Bryce Harper, you know, Mookie Betts, 12 years, you know, $400 million deal. That's never going to be the Rays.
Nor were they able to retain guys. If Randy Arozarena ends up doing what he did for the next 3 years and somehow becomes a free agent, whenever that is, good luck.
Well, he's got six years of team control. I mean, you've got he'll still be a rookie.
He'll still be a rookie
this coming season, I believe.
Yeah.
So he's got 3 years of rookie and then 3 years of arbitration.
But let's say he didn't, and that's good. God bless him, because that's the way the Rays roll. Mm-hmm. But let's say he was a free agent in 2 years. There's a guy. Now, but are they going to spend $25-30 million on? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, they may just go give us 1,000 prospects and trade them a year early.
Mm-hmm.
Rebuild their entire farm system.
But we also know there's a lot of prospects, you know, in the next couple of years getting ready to come up, too, from Wander Franco. Ronaldo Hernandez at catcher to, they have lots of pitching in depth, which is why they could trade a Matthew Liberatore to get Randy Arozarena. And they liked Matthew Liberatore, but they really liked Arozarena and what he could add to this team.
Yeah.
So
I just don't see Stu opening. The question is he going to open his wallet? And the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't, you know, unless the revenues go up significantly, I think the Rays pretty much set the budget based on where the revenues are. And, you know, Stu says they don't really make a lot of money every year.
But we're going to make some.
We don't know in baseball because nobody opens their books. But,
you know,
most sports teams, as a whole, NFL's different because of their contracts are so huge. But most sports teams in general don't make a ton of money year after year. When you win a lot of times, that helps, and there's, you know, you'll have ebbs and flows to it. But for the most part, the value is the franchise.
It's the franchise value.
It's the value. It's not actually how much money you pull out of it every year. The NFL can be the exception to that. But
it's like your home. It's like your house.
I think the Yankees probably pull out a lot of money every year, but that's the Yankees in New York. But
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I think the spending will basically depend on where they think the revenues are going to be, and I think that's how they'll determine what they have to spend. And Carl asked, and this goes on the Rays as well, the Rays are usually busy in the offseason. What positions are we deeper so that we can upgrade when we bring up Wander Franco and others? And are there Rays that are untouchables? Need a trade for catching? He also asked, will roster stay at 28 with COVID? Got to have minor leagues play this spring and summer.
I don't know about the rosters or the minor leagues. COVID will determine that, obviously. As far as position goes, seems to me like they got a hell of a lot of outfielders.
They got a lot of infielders too.
And at least some of those guys can also play the outfield.
Yeah, well,
everybody can play everywhere, as it turns out. You know, it's going to be interesting. Like, what happens? Is this Wander Franco's year? And if so, where's Willy Adames? Does he go to second? And if so, where's Joey Wendell? Does he go to third? And if so,
where's Brendan Lau go?
Yanni Diaz Lau So there's going to be a domino effect, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that will work itself out. I think Wander Franco is going to start in double or triple A. He hasn't played in live action essentially in, you know, a year and a half by the time the season starts. So I don't see him starting at the big league level. I see him getting time with the Rays later in the season. Most likely that happens because of injury. So if it's a Willy Adames that's out, he may slide in there. If it's Brendan Lau or Joey Wendell or whoever, you know, that's where you kind of figure out where they're going to slide in. And this is assuming all these guys are on the team going in. You know, that's the other part Carl asks. Are any Rays untouchable? I would think Randy Arozarena is untouchable at this point.
Yep.
I would think Wander Franco is untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many others I would say are.
Hmm.
Maybe Glasnow at this point, although I don't think he's untouchable.
Right, depends on what you get for him, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the haul. But I don't think the Rays view players as untouchable. Now, you know, maybe Wander Franco is touchable too, but I can't see a team ever coming up with a deal that the Rays would go, okay, yes. You know, I mean, I suppose you could, you know, offer the whole Yankees lineup for Wander Franco. Would you say yes on that? Yes.
Right. I mean, there was a time, you know, when Evan Longoria was coming off rookie of the year type stuff, like he was probably untouchable. He was under their control too. This is the other thing. You're not going to trade a guy that you're under control with for years and years. you know, unless
not,
you just
not likely
such
unless
a
you
haul.
Get them. Well, you know, they traded Matthew Liberatore, who was a pitcher they liked, who was a high prospect. Now, granted, he hadn't been to the big leagues.
He hadn't been
yet,
the big leagues though. Yeah.
But they traded him to get Randy Rosarin. I mean, you have to trade something to get something.
Sure.
You know, but is there any untouchables on this race? Like I said, I couldn't
probably
see them
not.
Trading Wander Franco or Randy Rosarin at this point. And a lot of that is the talent level plus how much control they have.
Right.
How many years under contract. Brendan Lau they signed to a friendly deal. But, you know, they also have a lot of depth at infield. So if someone calls and wants Brendan Lau
the
is
right
willing to
deal,
give you,
trade
you know, two
him.
Or three top pitching prospects and you go, hey, we like that return.
No doubt.
Even though Lau's on a friendly contract, would they do it? Sure. Blake Snell, would they do that?
Absolutely.
You know, even though he's locked into a friendly deal for the next few years. Sure. You know, the Rays, it's all about, you know, I don't think there's untouchable. I think it's, you know, some are
value.
Some
What's
are,
the value?
Yes. They value some players more than others, and it would take a lot more to get them. But
Right. Mike Trout is untouchable. You know, those are the kind of guys. Yeah.
But, you know, I think, look, if you're looking for the Rays as far as where they need to upgrade, or they have no catchers on the roster, essentially.
Yeah, so got to start there.
So they got to find some catching this offseason. Now, they could return Mike Zunino. He's a free agent. They didn't pick up the option at four whatever million it was.
Bleh.
But they could bring him back possibly. They really like the way he calls games.
They have a prospect, right, that's almost ready for the big league?
He's a couple years away probably. I think he played at the highest level he played this year was
single A.
Oh, maybe he would have been in double A probably this year, but obviously
except for the
it minors, didn't happen. Yeah. So he's still a couple years away, really. But yeah, that's the catcher of the future that they're banking on. So they could always use more pitching. I mean, you know, you're always looking for good arms and, you know, different types of arms for the bullpen, but you know, they could use some starters too. I mean, if Charlie Morton's not back, that changes what your needs are too. If he decides to come back and you work out a deal, then you know, that takes up a roster spot and that. So
yeah.
Look, the Rays roster, you know, we know the players on it now. I would imagine many of those players are going to be gone before we get to next season. It's just the way the Rays do business. Which ones, you can't just sit there and go, hey, we're getting rid of this player, because you got to find teams that want. If you're going to make a trade, teams got to want the player that you're giving up too. So it's easy to play fantasy. You know, I always love those guys that are like, you know, We'll trade Mike Brasso to get Giancarlo Stanton.
Be great.
You know, but that,
great for
the Yankees.
Are,
yeah, it might be, actually.
He'd hit 30. Yeah. All right, some great questions. We answered them all 100% correctly, as you know. Exciting weekend, the Masters. A tradition like no other. Past the Butler Cabin into Amen Corner, where the azaleas are not blooming, they're frozen.
Yeah, but actually, the course looks pretty good. I mean, you don't have the azaleas blooming, but everything else looks pretty authentic.
It's green as hell because it's 89 degrees out here.
That too.
In Georgia, too. So, you know, global warming. I don't know if you've heard about it. But yeah, so that's going to be fun. Tiger Woods, the defending champion. This is the one major he can still win. Don't care how old he is.
Mm-hmm.
He can still win this. Well, you're gonna watch Bryson DeChambeau absolutely drive every par four in this course. It's gonna be ridiculous. He's gonna make this course really small, which is gonna be fun to watch. And then we've got Matt Baker gonna talk some college football. Boy, a lot of games canceled around the SEC. Yeah.
Florida State's lost a few players.
Yes, they did. Bunch of guys bailing up there.
Yeah, that's not sure if that's a good or on the surface it's not good, but.
It happens.
You know, we'll see how Mike Norvell deals with it going forward.
Yeah, get his own guys in there. So lots to talk about. And then, of course, the Bucks preparing for their game at Carolina. Tom Brady's going to talk today. Todd Bowles will tell us why he played zone defense. Byron Leftwich will tell us about that game plan. It's going to be a great day of interviews for those guys. Jeez. This is when they say, oh, we're on to Carolina. Yeah, well, we didn't get to talk to you about the last game, so let's back up a little bit first. So. We'll have all that for you on Sports Day Tampa Bay, and check out my story on the Bucks and their slow starts in TampaBay.com. Remember, if you're looking for party platters, and who isn't this time of year, try Mr. Empanada. This place is phenomenal. If you haven't had an empanada, you need to. They get your best favorite food, put it in a pocket of homemade dough, and it's cooked brown, and just, it's delicious. And you can also order menu items from scratch. They've got soups and salads and Cuban sandwiches. Just do that online at MrEmpanada.com or call any of their 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay where Latin food, quality, and service meet. It's Mr. Empanada. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.